Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And my name is Oliver Hudson.
We wanted to do something that highlighted our relationship.
And what it's like to be siblings.
We are a sibling revelry.
No.
Sibling revelry.
Don't do that with your mouth.
Sibling revelry.
That's good. Okay, Oliver.
Kate.
It is Pride Month.
And the
Supreme Court just ruled that a landmark civil rights law protects gay and transgender workers from workplace discrimination. So that happened today. We are recording this intro today. When this airs, it will be a couple days later. It will be on Wednesday. But such a huge day. And I have to say, I'm just so grateful that the Supreme Court ruled for this and that... It just gives me a lot of hope.
It's a great day. We're at the tipping point of history.
Yeah, it's exciting. We
get to experience it and we get to sort of be a part of it.
It's exciting when something like this happens, because we're talking about discrimination. We're living in the middle of a time of racial injustice, of LGBTQ plus communities still dealing with discriminatory laws that until today you could be fired for being LGBTQ in 26 states.
It's fucking,
which is crazy,
insane.
But being a part of this change just gives me hope. And it was funny because we were doing these episodes. We did Kate Shots last week, and then we were going to do Khalil, who we just interviewed today, which was incredible. And we had a 2-hour history lesson. And I just felt like I really wanted to put Fortune's episode out in celebration of the LGBTQ plus community and this moment in history. And she's just hilarious. And
her brother's amazing as well.
They grew up in North Carolina, outside of Charlotte. Crazy stories about their childhood. They opened up about their parents' divorce. And remember the story about Fortune on the swim team?
Oh, yeah. She's so great. She's so genuine. And just there's just no bullshit. You know, I mean, they're not affected in any way with her success right now or fame. She is still the girl she always was.
I also love that their names are Fortune and Price.
Yeah.
You know,
the price of fortune. That's the book they should write together.
Right. But we recorded this one right before quarantine. So this was one of our last ones that we did.
I miss people.
I know.
I miss doing it in person.
I do too.
Fortune has a Netflix special called Sweet and Salty. If you haven't watched it yet, check it out.
I love Sweet and Salty. I love Fortune. I love Price. Enjoy this episode. Welcome to our podcast. Thank you. It's so nice to have you on. We usually just start with kind of asking where you guys came from. You know, where were you born and
where did you grow up?
Where
you were conceived.
All right.
Well, my parents would share that if they were here. They would.
Yes. They don't hold much
pride. They tell you the date, the location, everything.
So you don't know where you were conceived.
Oh, I know where I was. I just, you know, I try not to...
Think about it.
Okay.
So our parents are divorced, by the way.
Okay.
Broken home. They're still friends, though.
Those broken homes.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we're from North Carolina, from a small town called Belmont. It's like...
Where's Belmont?
It's like 30 minutes from Charlotte. Very tiny town. I think when we were coming up, it was like 5,000 people. Now I think it's doubled. It's 10,000. It's a cute little town, though. And
did you grow up in a nice neighborhood?
Yeah, definitely middle class.
I would say middle class. Now, Fortune can, you know, delve into this a little more. Our parents, especially our mom, she thought we wanted to be perceived as upper class. Mm. Okay. And so as what that means.
Because she grew up with a lot of money.
Yes.
And then our family lost all their money.
Yes.
Gambling.
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 We had someone in the family who gambled. It was through a series of different bad business decisions, because mm-hmm. our grandfather was a very talented, well-known contractor in North Carolina, built all the schools and all these houses all over North Carolina. And then he died, and people were not very smart with money. Wow. So by the time we came up, there was no money, but my mom didn't get the memo. So she liked to live like we had money. Yes. And like, we'd have like the lights were shut off, and she'd be like coming home like, look, this was on sale. And you're like, we don't have lights right now. So it was a very interesting childhood.
Did she ever come out of that? I mean, did she ever like discover reality, or was she just like, I'm just going to live this way for the rest of my life? It's easier.
What would you say, Price? Is she kind of still like some shop?
I would, yeah, oh my gosh. Yeah, I would say so.
So we had, like, we lived in a big house, because in North Carolina, though, that's, you can get, it's so much different. There's houses for so much cheaper. But then, like, our house would be,
like, no heat, empty. No light.
Yeah,
empty,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no food, yeah, in the refrigerator.
Okay.
And so, and our dad was, it's interesting. My mom grew up with everything, and you know, I think they had people make food for them, you know, they drove them everywhere. I mean, it was a life of privilege.
They had a lot of money.
Yes.
My dad, on the other hand, came from the other side of the tracks, as they said, where he had nothing.
He was like a
trailer. So it was, yeah, and so those two worlds met, and you can only imagine why
he was the bad boy.
Yeah, he was the bad boy.
Was.
Yeah.
So
your dad, I like those guys from the other side.
But your dad got to experience money and wealth for a period of time.
Yeah, because they had like a really extravagant wedding, and he had never even had a birthday cake until my mom made him one when he was like 17. Like, he had a very different upbringing. They were high school sweethearts, broke up in college, and then got back together after college. Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't go to college, she did. He joined the Navy. Mm-hmm. But she, as she says, it was lust. And we're like, okay, all right. whatever.
How did that affect your dad sort of coming into a lot of dough like that? And then once you guys lost it all, was he, because, you know, was he okay with that? Meaning, this is where he sort of came from. He knew how to handle it.
Well, I have been told that our grandmother, she's dead now, so she can't argue with me. I've been told she tried to pay him off to not marry my mom. Like, it was some soap opera stuff back then. She offered him money to not marry her, and he probably regrets that decision now. He could have gotten some money. But he married her anyway, but then ended up becoming very close with her. And I think once the money was gone, he was used to that.
Right.
So it wasn't like, oh, like, I'm out of here.
God, money just goes.
Yeah.
It really does.
Well, okay, this is just interesting to me. I mean, if someone, was it one person who gambled away a family fortune? And was it sports betting?
It was one person. It was one person who got into a lot of trouble, and my grandmother was bailing him out of these situations. And so it just kept happening and happening. And that didn't get rid of all the money, but it was a big chunk of it. And then they owned a, because he was a contractor, he also owned a hardware store that did really well. But then the Home Depots started coming in, the Lowe's, and my grandmother was too proud to claim bankruptcy. So she paid off every single debt, and it just wiped her clean.
Oof.
Yeah. And just a series of bad business decisions. She sold
it's
off
the other
land.
Side of the American dream.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah.
Well, it was a real testament, I think, to us to like, you gotta, like, nothing's guaranteed. Like, you can be at one place in life and anything can happen. So you really have to be smart and not go crazy. Like, I think we're all pretty responsible with money now.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think it did instill responsibility in us, because we did kind of see You know, at the time when there was, you know, we were prosperous and, you know, doing a lot of things and had more opportunities. We were a member of the country club, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. That's and then when it all went away, we saw the other spectrum of that.
How old were you guys when that shift happened?
It was like a gradual thing,
Yeah.
Don't you think?
It was.
Yeah.
But I would say, the difference in age between all of us is I'm the oldest. I've got a middle brother who's 3 years younger than I am. And then there's a 6 years difference between myself and Fortune. Mm-hmm. And so I would say I was probably, 12?
Yeah.
When in that area.
Mm-hmm. Wait, this is exciting. So you're the only girl and two mm-hmm. brothers.
Yes.
Don't you know when you meet girls uh-huh. who have brothers?
Oh, 100%.
It's like you know them right away.
Oh,
you're like,
for
okay,
sure.
She has brothers, no
yeah,
sisters.
Because there's a toughness there.
It's so true.
And anybody that I knew who just had a sister was always, they were a little daintier. You know, I used to laugh at my friend who would like fight with her sister. They'd be like, "You stop it! No, you stop it!" And I'm like, "This is it.
Weird. This is weird."
We were punching each other and wrestling. It was very rough and tumble.
So growing up, it was rough and tumble with the two boys.
Oh, yeah. We were sports guys. Yeah. We were your all. You know, we were boys.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Playing the woods, scouts.
And I just wanted to do whatever they did.
Yeah, I was about to say, where did Fortune fit into that? Once she was of age to sort of roll with you guys.
I refused to do whatever they were doing. I was like, I'm doing it. And they were like, but you're little. And I'm like, I don't care. And all the boys in the neighborhood, everybody in the neighborhood was all boys too. So I was just like,
this is my life.
In a constant state of like being hurt.
Boy, I know.
I'd come home with like a busted lip. Yeah. I'm fine. I'm one of the guys. And my other brother would like punch me in the stomach. Are you kidding?
I always felt like I had to do things that were better than what they were doing.
Yeah.
Like if they were jumping off of this like dirt mound, uh-huh. like I'd do the higher one.
Yeah, I would try, but I was always getting hurt.
And like, were you guys accepting, or were you sort of like, leave us alone?
More leave us alone.
Yeah.
Price was better about it because he was further. Like he ended up kind of taking on more of a dad role, like. Mm-hmm. Well, because our dad traveled a lot, so he was always the one teaching me how to play. Like, you know, he'd play catch with me, or he was way more patient with me. I think because Jay and I were closer to age, he was just like, "Ugh, get out of here." But I remember, like, if he was obviously the first one to have like a girlfriend, I would sit in between them all the time, like watching movies, and he could have been like, "Get out of here," and he would just let me sit there, which I can't believe in hindsight. He wasn't more so like, funny. You suck, leave us alone.
That's the cutest thing.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, yeah, we did that a lot. Yeah. Actually, the girlfriend always looked at me, is she always going to be right here?
Right. He's like, oh,
I'm working on it.
And your middle brother's name is Jay.
Jay.
And so you and Jay, what was that relationship like compared?
Because we fought a lot more.
You did.
Yeah. Because I would be annoying, and he picked on me a lot, and the two of them would gang up on me for sure. Oh, the worst was, I don't think I've ever told anyone this story. We went to Orlando, and this was back when, you know, SeaWorld was really popular, and it was the worst thing that's ever happened to me, because we went to see Shamu the whale. So afterwards, they started calling me Shamu. And I was like,
No.
I'm not a whale.
No.
So that was my nickname for the next like 6 years.
No, that's terrible. No. Well, I was Hammerhead.
Oh, yeah.
Because my eyes were so far apart when I was little. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah. So Ollie called me Hammerhead and Dumbo because of my ears.
Yeah.
So
this is what hurts shows Hammerhead sharks. Yeah. Their eyes are on either side.
It's crazy what brothers come up with.
Because they're such assholes.
Yeah, they're such assholes. We never called.
Well, see, we got a reaction out of her. And that was the thing. She hated it so much. Like, she doesn't like it.
Oh,
let's do it.
Of course. Yeah. I tell that to my kids all the time. Just nod and say, yeah, I am that. Because all he wants right now is your reaction.
100%.
And the minute you don't give it to him, he's going to stop. But they can't fucking listen.
Yeah, you don't.
And
they don't know that when you're young.
It's too fiery.
Ollie used to go out to the door and be like,
Kate, it's kind of windy outside. You might blow away right. my ears.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I gave her wind warnings. Yeah. You know, morning wind forecast. Just so the wind wouldn't pick her up by her ears and take her away.
Oh my gosh, brothers, that is awesome.
And I would always be the like, Mom. Yes. He called me this. And
did you guys get spankings?
Spankings
every now and then. But when we got bigger, you know, they would. It was normally, you know, every now and then the belt would be broken out, and
that's old school.
Yeah, that's old school right way. There. And then of course, you know, and I don't know it in the South. They have the switch, mm-hmm, the stick, mm-hmm. and every now. But then I was always a big kid, so I was like 6 foot tall at like 13 years old.
Wow. With and the mustache.
So my dad tried it one time and I literally took it from him, like, don't do that again, yeah. Dad. He's like, yep. That was the end
my
of
my dad's
the,
like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I just grew very quickly as a young child. So,
you were the only seventh grader with a mustache.
Yes. I did have a
amazing
puberty started early for me.
But we would still have fun with each other too. Yeah. Like, we would, give each other the middle finger.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd be like, Mom! You know, we would be doing it to each other and be like, hey, Price, give me the middle finger. And she's like, Price. And I'm all like,
So the middle finger was one of those things that was such a fun thing to discover. Yeah. Remember when you were like, how are you going to do the middle finger? Is it going to be like this?
Oh,
or is it going to be like this?
If you did
kind
that.
Of were like, what's cool? Like, that was cool for us.
This was the cool one. That was like, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, but now this one's more badass.
Yeah. Because you're sticking it further up.
Yeah. For those who can't see, it's like when you get that full extension. Yeah.
Whereas before, you're like, nah.
Right.
You know. But it was like, so, like, we thought we were being so, like, cool to give each other the middle finger.
Oh, man. I like my Function of Beauty. I have been using it. It is very good on the hair, I have to say. I am now a good 2 weeks, I think, into having the product, and I love it. I love it. Really simple.
I need to get on it.
Here's what I like about Function of Beauty. You can customize it to whatever you need to customize it to.
Wait, don't you take a quiz or something?
Yeah, you take a quiz. You talk about your hair needs. Curly hair, straight hair, wavy hair, and then they deliver your hair care system. There's different colors. You could do no dye or different, like, pretty colors. There's yellow, pink, blue.
Oh, and then you can create your own fragrance. That's a pretty cool thing.
It says your name on it. So, like, mine says Function of Hudson.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. And then, which means you could use it too, Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
It's clean beauty, which I love. So there's no sulfates, no parabens. These things can, over a period of time, can have really harmful effects. So clean beauty, like Function of Beauty, is to me everything.
Right. So to get started right now, go to functionofbeauty.com/sibling to take your 4-part hair profile quiz and save 20% off on your first order. Don't spend another minute in hair misery. Go to functionofbeauty.com/sibling to let them know that we sent you. That's functionofbeauty.com/sibling. Sakara, whoa, oh, Sakara, whoa, oh.
Sakara is a nutrition company, focuses on overall wellness, starting with what you eat.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. Their organic, ready-to-eat meals are made with a powerful plant-based ingredients, and they're designed to boost your energy, improve your digestion, and get your skin glowing. I am like the sun. I am glowing like the sun right now because I've been grinding my Sakara.
I can actually vouch for that. That, yes, when you commit to a Sakara, you are eating really amazing, pure food, organic, plant-based, and your body responds really well. It's really nice. The menu, it's creative. Chef-crafted breakfasts, lunches, and dinners. They change weekly, so they're always different.
And you know, I gotta say something. So we've been doing this. We've been reading Sakara ads for a minute now, and I've always complained about my bloating. Well, not a lot of bloat these days. My upper GI bloating has definitely gone down. Still got a little lower GI bloat that's coming down, and Sakara is part of this.
they sell this metabolism super powder, and it's all natural, and it is a remedy for bloating and weight, for bloating, weight gain, and fatigue, and it's doing wonders for my tummy.
I love that. It also receives rave reviews, Ollie, from Vogue, Goop, Gwyneth, New York Times, and more.
Anyway, right now, Saqqara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to saqqara.com/sibling or enter code sibling at checkout. That's Saqqara, SAKARA.com/sibling to get 20% off your first order. Saqqara.com/sibling.
Did you always live in the same house growing up?
Yeah, we lived in that house till I was 18. When I went to college, they sold it. And then my mom, my grandmother had died, and so my mom moved into my grandmother's, the house she grew up in. She moved into that house. But it was big. That was the fancy house that she grew up in. So it was like almost 6,000 square feet, and half of it hadn't been lived in like 20 years. No. So it was very creepy. I'm pretty sure there are ghosts in here.
Is it still in the family?
No, we ended up selling it like 5 years later. It was just too big. Like, it was just my mom and her brother. And my grandmother had like lots of antiques. So it looked like an old like French parlor, and like, which was cool, but then you would go to the upstairs and like all the bedrooms were empty. And it was sad to lose the house because my grandfather built it, but it was kind of creepy for me. So I was like,
What was the style?
It was a big brick house, big open windows with chandeliers everywhere, spiral staircase.
Yeah, I was gonna say, with the entrance of the house, it was one of those kind of, I call it like a Charleston theme, where you have the big staircases where, you know, the lady is, you know, coming down the stairs. Mm-hmm. It's one of those where you can almost present, you know, here comes Fortune down the stairs. It was kind of like that.
She's here.
Is that
for
kind of
Santa.
Impressive? Yeah.
So, what is your brother's middle name?
His name's John William, so he goes by Jay.
Fortune and Price are your middle names.
Yes.
I'm Emily Fortune, and you're I'm Michael Price.
Because our dad's name is Mike. Or Michael Lee Feimster, and my mom didn't want to have two Mikes or Michaels. So, and our grandfather's name was Price. Mm. And so that's where I got the name Price.
Yeah.
And so
Price is a great name.
Yeah, it is.
Did you decide that you wanted to be called Price, or did that just happen?
No, it was just, I was born with it. And what's interesting, when people, like when you meet people for the first time now, it's like, is that your last name? I'm like, no. And then they're like, well, do you go by Pierce? Price, Bryce, Price.
Yeah, there's not a lot of Prices.
Oh, yeah. So college professors would always just kind of mess with me and say, well, what's your real name? Price. And, well, how do you spell it? And they could not do the P-R-I-C-E.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to spell it something different or add the B to it. And I've been called Prince. I've been called Pierce. And to this day.
It's Price.
Well, and my wife gets on me. I don't correct people. So if you called me
Price,
Prince
is the nicest name
I've
ever
known.
So great.
Right, yeah, Prince.
And then Fortune.
So Fortune is my great grandmother's maiden name, and but I grew up as Emily. That was my mom's favorite cousin's name, and she loved. My mom always wanted a really girly girl. She wanted a girl, but like I had like 50 dresses before I was even born, and so I was Emily growing up, and I started going by Fortune when I was 23, because my grandmother really wanted my mom to name me Fortune, because
it's such a cool name.
Yeah. But my mom said that I would, you know, she's like, no way, she'd have to be Miss America to live up to a name like that.
You're like, watch
and I
this,
was like,
mom.
Yeah, come on. So as when I got older, I was like, I really want to start going by Fortune. It was kind of like a nod to my grandmother because she was a big influence on me. But I did think that you could be like Fortune on stage and Emily in life, and it just doesn't quite work out.
When
like
did
that.
You decide to go all in on Fortune?
I think it was around 24. I started at the Groundlings, and I kind of as an experiment, just I was like, oh, I'm gonna tell them my name's Fortune, and I told them, and at the end of class, they had a game where we sat in a circle and everyone tried to, it was like a name game, try to remember everyone's name. And I was the only name that literally every person in the class remembered. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I have a pretty cool middle name. I should probably start using this. There was three or four of them. They called them the Misfortunes.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. So there's a lot of Fortunes in our family, yeah, but with the last name.
And where'd you go to college?
I got my undergrad at a college called UNC Charlotte, and I've got a master's degree from Winthrop University as well. And so I've educated myself over the years. Comedy was not in my card, so
I went to a small women's college in Raleigh called Peace College.
Peace.
I know it sounds very hippie. The founder was, the last name was Peace. William Peace.
That's so cute.
I know. Everyone's like, oh, it's like hippie.
What's the philosophy of the college?
It's a liberal arts school. It's really, it's very small, like 1,000 at most, 800 maybe. It used to be a 2-year college, and then it went to 4-year. Now it's co-ed, because it's hard to keep the, you know, women's colleges are kind of a dying breed. Yeah. But it was like right near NC State, so all the girls were looking for husbands, and it was just like it almost felt like a different time. Everything felt very innocent, yeah, and like one big sorority almost, where you're just like going to class in pajamas.
When did you know you were funny? I mean, as a kid, were you always making everyone laugh, or was...
I had moments of it, yeah, but I wasn't like... No one would have been like, oh, she's known for being the funny one. I could be like, I was animated around my family, but kind of quiet at school. And then I would watch Saturday Night Live all the time. Mm. So I would memorize those sketches and then do them for my friends at school on Monday. And they'd be like, oh, you're funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was just ripping off other people's material. but I had to grow into it. I wasn't like... people now are like, was she always funny? They're like, no.
Right. She wasn't like the ham.
No, the I mean, and that's the thing. She was kind of quiet and just kind of kept to herself. Because what's interesting, our dad's really funny. And he makes these little stupid jokes that, you know, are kind of... they're so... silly, you just kind of laugh at them. My brother's the same way, and you know, with Fortune, she just kind of, you know, it was a reserve, but when she did perform for people, I mean, it's like a different person. You're like, oh my gosh, she was this person. Mm-hmm. And so when people ask family the question, like, oh, is your sister funny? I mean, well, yeah, she's brilliantly funny, you know, but when she's around family, it's just, we're just talking as family. Yeah.
But did you get off on it? Meaning like that feeling of making people laugh, like, holy shit, this just feels good. I want to keep doing that.
Well, I think I was always a chubby kid, I've always been a big girl. And so when I was young, I don't think I wanted people to look at me because I felt very, you know, fat. And so,
yeah, well, your brother calling you
shampoo to hell, right? Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. So I think it was the way I was comfortable with people looking at me, laughter with me. I was in on the joke, you know. So it was a way for me to communicate with people. And so it wasn't as much like, oh my God, this feels so good, like making them laugh. It was like, oh, this is how I can fit in. This is how I can have friends. And so then it became, I was never the outcast then in that way. You know, I never got picked on. Because I was the person making everyone laugh. Wow,
right.
Yeah, so it was my way of just survival, I think, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting, you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Well, I'm glad I found it, you know?
Well, it's funny you talk about, you know, using comedy that way, or being funny, and how it sort of helped you get through and to be accepted. And, you know, I'm not a comedian, but I love making people laugh. It's always been, you know, a joy, right? But only recently, in the last year, I've realized that sometimes I will use self-deprecation to sort of mask a potential inadequacy.
Oh, yeah.
And I will make fun of myself in some way, whether it be my career or...
Showing your ass on Instagram. Right.
I have seen that. Yeah. It's nice.
Thanks.
I wonder what inadequacy that's covering up.
No, that's adequate. That's an adequate ass. But only recently I discovered that about myself.
Yeah, probably like some sort of insecurity of like, I'm going to make the joke before anyone else can make it or think it.
Right, but I do self-deprecation. I think self-humor is huge. I mean, I think it's a necessity. Almost,
yeah, for sure. You know? For me, it's like we had a very interesting childhood. We have a very wacky family. It was like, why not just like dip into this personal stuff? Then you're never like... telling the stories that other people have told because they're your stories. And so for me, my comedy, I want to be relatable. I don't want to be like this kind of comic or this kind of comic. I'm like, I'm going to tell you stories. And no matter what your background is, you're going to be able to relate to something.
Yeah.
And so that, especially with my special, I did that. The whole thing was a one big storytelling thing. And I, when I started comedy, used to be a lot more self-deprecating because I wanted people to like me. This special has some of it in the beginning, but then I really go away from it and then just talk about it's a journey of someone finding themselves. And that, and I did a lot of the wrong thing, or I would try things thinking this is who so-and-so wants me to be, and it would of course not work because I wasn't being my true self.
Mm-hmm. Price, have you come up in her comedy?
Well,
has she told stories about you where you're like, oh fuck,
don't sis, do that.
Well, the brothers have said, hey, leave us out of it. And so, but of course our parents love it because they think they're celebrities anyway. And so when my mom and dad, anytime they mention their names and all that, they're just kind of like, oh my gosh, yeah.
They light up. But I go, you do know that story is not a great story about you. Yeah. Like, we don't care. Yeah.
but you guys asked to stay out of it. Like, we actually had the conversation, like, we don't want anything talked about.
Well, I guess
informally.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with the Hooter story stuff is great. Right. That all was based on our, you know, family going to Hooters, and it happened, you know. What's funny about the Hooters stuff is
great wings.
Yeah. But when my brother and I were younger, we used to run these 10K races. We weren't runners. I mean, we just thought it was cool to run a long race, so we did. And our celebration was to go to Hooters afterwards.
Right.
So next thing you know, we're going to Hooters. Now, we're 13, 14-year-old boys going to Hooters. And
that was like six.
Yes, exactly.
Going to Hooters.
Absolutely. So that's how our family started going to Hooters.
Yeah. And so it was like, why not talk about these things? Because they're funny, you know? And I said one joke about them in my special. I don't ever like name you guys.
Right.
But I just go, oh, I came out to my brothers. And they were like, duh. And I was like, well, thanks for telling me. Apparently they knew a lot.
Way before
I did.
Yeah. Really? Well, again, back to, our, you know, when we talked a little earlier about her hanging out with us. We were playing soccer, baseball, softball. She was always there. When we'd go to church, you know, she'd want to dress kind of like, you know, the button-down shirt. No dresses. Right. You know, we never saw her with guys. We never saw, there was never a date or somebody, you know, let's go hang out. No talk of a guy or anything like that.
But so, you were never feeling even a 12, 13-year-old lust for female. You know what I mean?
I did, but it was masked in angst of like, that's my best friend. I love her so much. I'm such a good friend. Oh. You know, it was, I just thought I was super intense about friends, you know? And they would go, are you? My mom would be like, what?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was just always like, she's going out with a guy? But doesn't she know we're best friends? Like, it was very angsty. But it was a different time.
Yeah.
You know, they're just, especially in our small town, people didn't really talk about being gay. It wasn't the thing. Like now, it's just like, oh yeah, so and so's gay, whatever. Mm-hmm. You're like, it was not a thing. We didn't know any out gay.
Was there
people.
Anyone in your school or whatever that was like you
now
might?
Now we know that they are gay.
That they were they back in the day.
Yeah, they weren't.
And
out.
You hear a reference in the Carolinas. We live in the Bible Belt. Well, that's simply because there's so many churches on every corner where you go, and people are. Gosh, I'm not going to get in trouble here, but a lot of people say they're very religious when they're not really religious, but they have these beliefs because the church believes in, you know, gays and lesbians. Oh, you know, they're the devil, you know, but even though they're friends and they like the person and all that, there's kind of a double standard, like, especially where we came from.
Without a doubt.
Yep.
Without a doubt. I think that's across the board.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Very true.
Board, yeah.
So, and it wasn't like I felt like I wasn't hearing negative thing. It wasn't like people were going, oh, gay people are the devil. They legitimately weren't talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Did you really discover that you were gay through a Lifetime movie?
I really
did. Is
that
fucking true?
I talk about it in my Netflix special too. I tell a story about realizing I was gay via Lifetime movie.
Which I've done one, by the way.
Yeah.
I did one called Carolina Moon, by the way.
It was in South Carolina. You did?
Yeah. Nice. Carolina Moon. I had a line. I said, Claire was with a girl named Claire Forlani, who's an actress, and she's driving away, and she stops, and it's raining, and I run into the rain.
That's
and,
what's up.
You know, oh, it's one of those. And I said, I will, the line was, I will travel to the ends of the earth if that's where you're going.
That's right.
That's what I said.
That is so Lifetime.
And then she gets out of the car, and it's raining. We're literally spinning around in the rain.
I hope that's I hope
Carolina Moon.
Just need this to put that on your website.
It's true.
But so a Lifetime movie gave you some sort of
I think it was bubbling. You know, I'd moved to LA at this point, and it was bubbling up. You know, that you can only hold this
you
down.
Moved to LA. I mean,
that was the big thing. Yeah. I was finally seeing gay people. I was seeing how normal it was.
Yeah, you went. You had some drinks at the Abbey.
This brunch seems fun. What am I doing at church with all the straighties? I want a waffle. So it was bubbling up. And I think it was like sitting right here. Like it was ready to just be like, ugh. And the catalyst, it's so embarrassing. And I didn't tell this story for years because I wanted to be like, oh, I met some girl and I told her I would walk to the ends of the earth. Right. You know, I wanted my real Lifetime moment. But I watched this. I was by myself watching this Lifetime movie called The Truth About Jane. And this girl in high school realizes she's gay. Her mom, played by Starker Channing, was very against it at first. She's like, boo. And then by the end of the movie, she's like, yay. And it was like this beautiful like family moment. And I legitimately said out loud for the first time, I was like, oh, my God, I'm gay. And then I just sat there in shock that this was the journey to that realization. And I knew forever.
Starker Channing was a part of your moment.
Rizzo.
What about family? Was fully accepted?
Yeah. I didn't tell them for probably about another 8 months or so because I was like, I'm in LA. Who will know? And so I think I told my mom first at the Chinese restaurant that I talk about, and she was more just like, I don't want your life to be harder than it's already could be. You know, it was more of just like, I don't want to see my kid go through anything. I don't want people to hate you now just because of this. So it was more of her shifting her dream for me. My dad immediately was just like, you're my daughter. I love you. You're my daughter. I love you. Because he didn't know what to say. I love you. You're my daughter. And my mom was she's like, Mike, she knows she's your daughter. She is telling you she's gay.
That's very true. Dad was just on repeat. I love you. You're my daughter.
He didn't know what else to say. Like, yeah, you're my daughter. I love you. And you're like, oh, that's so beautiful. That's him accepting me. In such a ridiculous way, you know?
And then the boys were like, we know.
I told them. Yeah, they said, we know. And we were outside at my mom's house. And Price went, you're not going to believe what's behind you right now. Do you remember this?
I do remember.
He goes, look up. I turned around and there was a giant rainbow right over my head.
Yeah, how appropriate, you know?
Wow.
And then our brother Jay at that Christmas brought me a book, something about beavers. Yeah. So I was like, I think they've accepted me.
We do the same.
I wish
great.
I could remember the name of that book, Mr. Beaver or
something. Yeah.
Something about beavers. Yeah. I was like, all right, here come the gay jokes.
Yep, here they go.
But I'd rather have that, obviously, than them not accept me.
Cause Box. Oliver.
Yeah, it's like the movie you did, but different. Cosbah. Rock the Cosbah. But instead, we're rocking the Cause Box.
I love this company. What it does is it's quarterly, it's four times a year. It's a subscription box curated by women for women, and it's filled with all sorts of amazing products and brands. They're ethical, sustainable, and have a positive mission to give back and make the world better.
But the good thing about this for men as well is that you can create gifts for the people, the women that you love in your life as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And we love a gift, Ollie.
That's right.
Every cause box is limited edition. So it comes with 6 to 8 full-size products. Everything from skincare, jewelry, homewares, and accessories. And the value. I love a good value. You're doing about $250+ worth of product at a $50 cost.
Well, they just launched their summer box.
Yes, the summer box. There's a bento box in it that's really beautiful, a duffel bag, and the jade roller. And of course, because it's on here, there's going to be a code and a discount off your first box for 30% off.
Mm-hmm. You go to causebox.com. Well, www.causebox.com/sibling. Use the code sibling. You get your first box for 30% off. As in, you can get your first box worth over $250, $250+ for less than $39 and free shipping. So go check out CauseBox right now. I can tell you secondhand, you're going to love it. It says firsthand. Why don't you say that part?
Yes, I can tell you firsthand, you'll love it.
I love my Helix. I love my Helix.
Are you still pretty actively sexual on your Helix? You know, when you first got it, you were very actively sexual on your bed. That was like, you were like, we got a new bed.
It's a beautiful, okay, it's a beautiful lovemaking bed. There's just no doubt about it.
Okay, so I mean, it's still going strong. This is a great selling point.
I love my Helix mattress. I did the quiz myself. And, you know, you enter all of the things, the way you sleep, whether you sleep hot or cold or side sleeper or your back sleeper, and then boom,
that's
out
the quiz,
pops
right?
What mattress that is perfect for you. Mine was the Midnight Lux, which is like perfect for my personality, just even the name is. So it's just been great. Erin loves it. My wife loves it so much. We just dumped our mattress of 15 years. And now we're on the Helix, and we couldn't ask for a better mattress.
Well, I love this. I love that you're sleeping great on your Helix.
By the way, Helix awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2019 and 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine.
10-year warranty. You got to try it out for 100 nights, risk-free, and yep, they'll pick it up if you don't love it, but you will.
Pretty damn good. And it comes in like this. It came to my house, and I was like, wait a minute, where's the mattress? Because it was so small. And I was like, oh, shit, they probably gave me like a single.
You just like told this story 100 times.
No, I know, but there's people who haven't listened to this.
How do you know? How do you know? They've listened to it. They know. The mattress, it comes in a box. It comes up. You loved it. You loved it so much that you called the kids in. And you were like, watch the mattress come out of the box.
Oh, God. Okay, fine. You just finished the story. Anyway, Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helix.com/sibling. That's Helix, H-E-L-I-X, sleep.com/sibling for up to $200 off.
Are you guys all pretty tight, the siblings?
Yeah. I mean, we have very different lives. They're married with kids, you know, and they own a fishing company, so they're always working.
Tell me all about this fishing company.
I'm a huge fisherman.
Oh, really?
Well, that's my passion.
Yeah, so my brother and I have 2 fishing companies. We own, first one is our digital media company called pointclickfish.com, okay. And it's freshwater and saltwater fishing news. We go around about 30 events, live stream, big billfish events and all that.
Cool.
And then we own what's called the Southern Kingfish Association, which is a big kingfish, saltwater fish. It's about 3,000 plus members that my brother and I we purchased it last year.
That's so cool.
And so that's what we do.
They're bringing, you know, with their media company, they're making fishing accessible to a lot of people, like live streaming it. And so people that love fishing but can't be there, tune in and listen to it. So they've been busy building their businesses. Awesome. I've been busy, you know, doing the stand-up
acting. And what about Jay?
They own that together.
Oh, so you guys do that together.
We've been 20 years.
He's in the Coast Guard.
How is it working together?
It's Wright Brothers.
I'm glad I'm not in the business. Yeah,
there's times that there's, you know, we have brother moments, but we get over it pretty quick.
What would you say would be your biggest just overall disagreement in running a business, you and your brother?
Well,
they're very different.
Yeah.
Jay was in the Coast Guard for years, so he knows so much about fishing. And Price has learned a lot about it. You're the finance, the guy, the business guy. So they come from Jay's a creative.
Mm-hmm. I handle all of the business stuff.
So Jay's let's get a 42 Bertram. Exactly. Yeah. Fucking put four, Cummins on that.
Yes.
And you're like,
and I'm
dude,
like, how much does this cost?
Right. Yeah.
And that's exactly where I come into.
Yeah. Let's get all the Shimano reels.
That's where I come into play. And so, but it's been great. I love working with my brother.
Yeah.
It gives us an opportunity to work together.
Mm-hmm. And they're nice guys, people like working with them, so I'm proud of them doing their thing, and I want them to succeed. And you know, I'm so we're all close, but it's like they're in North Carolina, I'm in California. They're married, they have kids. I have my fiance. Our kids are our dogs, so we just have different lives in that way.
How many kids do you have?
I have one. I have a 10-year-old boy.
Aww.
Yes, and he's our only one, and so he's spoiled rotten. And so you know,
does he fish?
Yeah, he loves to fish. All right, good. He does. Yeah. And Jay's got two boys of his own as well. And they're all close and they all do stuff.
Boys.
Yeah.
So many boys.
Lots of boys.
I know. My mom was like dying for someone to have a girl.
Yes.
She wants it so bad.
Do you want kids?
We're on the fence. We don't know. Because really? Jax is was a kindergarten teacher for 12 years.
Oh, shit. So you've had your share of children.
Yeah. But she's like she'd be the best.
She's sitting right
she'd
behind
be the
me.
Best. I would be the one that would be like the dad, kind of like, you know, do what your mom says, but here's a cookie, you know, like that.
Had you never thought about a romantic connection until the Lifetime thing, or had you had any experiences?
No experiences.
Interesting.
I came out.
What about with men?
I didn't really date guys either. I would have like a date here and there, but we immediately like went into like high-fiving each other.
Right.
There was never any like chemistry in that way, but I get along really well with men. Having two brothers, we'd have so much to talk about, but then it would kind of end, you know, you have to have those pheromones, whatever you call it. And we didn't have that. So I just didn't date. Yeah. I think I channeled everything into just kind of being an overachiever. I was like in every sport. I played tennis in college, was the student body president. That's how I like channeled that, you know, lack of dating. I channeled it into that. Because you kind of, as a gay person who doesn't know you're gay, you're sort of always being rejected in a weird way. They're not saying no to you per se, but you're never like the object of someone's affection when you're young and you don't, you know, you're not dating. So you have to have something where you get a pat on the back or get, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just didn't really have the dating experiences. So once I came out, I was 25 and I was having to make all the mistakes in my late 20s that you get to make when you're, you know, 17.
Right. Yeah.
So I was not a catch for a very long time because I was very awkward and, you know, just didn't. Jax met me at the right time. At that point, I was real suave. Right? Right?
So when you came to LA, did you immediately start doing comedy?
I came to LA to work and I didn't really have friends for a while because I found it to be a very difficult place to meet people. In North Carolina, you like make friends everywhere. In the gas station, you'll be like, oh, hey, what's up? And somehow you're like hanging out a week later. Here, I just couldn't meet people. So I decided, because I loved Saturday Night Live growing up, I would take classes at the Groundlings. As like a hobby and as a way to make friends. And my teachers just kept going, oh, you gotta keep doing this. And it quickly became a passion.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I auditioned for the Groundlings. Mm-hmm. Did not go well.
Yeah,
really?
Oh, my God. My friends and I did it, you know, like, let's just go audition for the Groundlings.
And I misinterpreted something, and oh, I guess yeah. it just, you know, that you were supposed to go up on stage and you turn your back to the stage, to mm-hmm. all the class, and then they call something out like you're a yeah. dentist or uh-huh. you're, you know, a sleazy doc, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I'm standing, and then you turn around and you just fucking go.
Right.
And so they go, all right, you're the king of cheese. Uh-huh. And I took it literal. So I turned, this wasn't a choice. This is really what I thought.
This is hilarious.
So I turn around and I'm like, hey, he wants the mozzarella. I've got cheddar here. I got this. And I start trying to hawk cheese.
I love that though.
I thought it was a good choice, even though it wasn't a choice. I actually misinterpreted what they said. And people were standing there looking at me like, what the fuck is he doing? And I was like, I've got some provolone. I was like an Italian cheese hawker.
You need to be the king of cheese.
I think your teacher should have known better.
I know.
And I remember no one was really laughing. And I was like, oh shit. And I didn't even realize that I had fucked up the interpretation of it until I sat down with my friends and they're like, what are you doing, dude? They meant like a cheesy guy. And I'm like, oh no. Oh God. I went literal. I was like selling Monterey Jack on stage.
Nowadays though, that there would be someone who would appreciate that. Like they were very rigid back in the day where it's like, you know, you have to do it this way. And they've really, you know, expanded into lots of different types.
I've been thinking about going and doing like a UCB or ground like again. It's just fun. It's just so fun.
I did a show the other night because sometimes they'll have like, you know, alums come do improv.
Yeah.
And you know, it's one of those things where you're really just doing it. Like, it's like going to the playground as an adult.
Yeah.
Because some people are like, why do you do improv? You're like, it's just silly. And
do you get nervous still?
A little, sometimes, only because improv, like once you have not been doing it for a while, you get out of practice and you're like, oh my God, I forgot how to like deliver information to these scenes. But it's helped me a lot in stand-up because especially when I was coming up in the clubs and I was building my set, you have to fill time, right? So I would be like, hey, who has a cool job and let's see where we go with it. And through my improv, I would go on these like 20-minute runs of making all this stuff up just based on what jobs people were telling me. So it was fun. It made it, you know, like the show different every night.
Did you have comedians who you like really looked up to as a kid or growing up or coming up?
A lot of the SNL people. Like Adam Sandler, I loved. Yeah, I like the silly people. Chris Farley. Then the next round was like Will Ferrell,
sure.
Molly Shannon. I liked anyone who didn't take themselves seriously.
Well, you channel some Farley's physical comedy.
Yeah.
And there's some back and forth stuff that you're doing.
Yeah, I do a lot of facial expressions.
Yeah, it's you can see it, you know.
So I think I was, by watching them, sort of like was taking on what I thought was funny in them, I would sort of do. And then I'm also a really big Carol Burnett fan. Mm-hmm. My grandmother used to watch her show, so she would play the reruns. Yes. Yeah. So, and she in her show was like her monologue, that's essentially stand up. Then she would do all those sketches. And at the end, the Q&A, it's improv. And I feel like my career's done. I do all of those things, and I think it really stemmed from watching her.
You did this really funny thing about being on the swim team.
Mm-hmm. It's all true. Yeah, well, someone was
not elaborated at all.
There's a little. I didn't climb up on a block. You jumped off from the.
But the best was his pole is shallow. He's like, fuck it. I can
stand
walk.
Up. Because someone wrote me being like, that's impossible. You couldn't dive into a pool and stand up. I'm like, okay.
I know.
What do you want me to measure the pool? So we dove off of the side and not the blocks. Okay. But I legit like tiptoed, you know, running tiptoed. Because it wasn't like I was the water. I still was like barely above the water, but I was running through the pool. And I mean, I was the worst swimmer. I was the worst. I would do like back, like literally on the backstroke, they would be done for like 10 minutes. And I'm in the middle of the pool still, running into the lanes. And I at one point would stand up and look back and be like, oh boy, and then keep going. I had no business swimming, but my brother swam. Mm-hmm. So
not this one. It's Jay.
You
yeah.
were on the team for a minute.
Oh, but I sucked. I was horrible.
Yeah. Were you an athlete though?
Yes. I was baseball, tennis, and soccer growing up. And so that's, yeah, very active. And my brother was a competitive swimmer. And and fortunately, I both play tennis.
Oh, right.
A yeah. lot. And so
we never got into when your parents divorced.
Yeah.
How old were you when that happened?
I was 12. You had about to go to college.
Yeah. We were talking about this last night in the car, that we had a really interesting experience when my parents started to make the decision of getting divorced. I had just started my first day of college, and my dad, the whole family went up. And again, I'm the oldest, and I'm going to college for the first time. And it was one of those situations that, like, Price is situated, he's ready to go. And, you know, our dad had made a decision that, you know what, I think this is the time for me to split.
Well, they had separated
yes.
and started sort of dating again in a weird, like.
But did you know this?
Yeah.
Was the family aware of this?
Yeah. Yes.
We knew there was some issues going on.
Yeah.
We just, as kids, we just didn't know the extent.
And they didn't have the talk, like, hey, guys, we want to tell you something.
Well, we knew that there was trouble. But then, like, my dad started, like, coming to pick my mom up for dates. And we're like, well, this is weird. But then apparently, I didn't know this, Price told me last night, that my dad put the nail in the coffin the day they moved him
the
into
day one,
the
yeah,
dorm.
For college. And so you can only imagine how my first semester of freshman year went in college.
Right.
It was a disaster. You know, and I felt it. Fortune was like, what, 12?
Yeah.
And my brother was 15. And
it's
my
a
mom.
Hard time for divorce to happen.
And my mom had just kind of, that just, you know, ruined her pretty much. And so, as the oldest, I was getting calls from my mom on a daily basis. Oh, but can you believe your dad? And this and that. And so, but I think that's what kind of built, especially, you know, Fortune with their comedy up as well. I mean, we had to, our family's lighthearted. We laugh a lot and all that. So it was a serious situation. And to this day now, I know this sounds very dark how we're talking right now, but I mean, my parents are good friends now and everything's great now and stuff.
We make light of everything.
Yeah.
Any tragedy our family had, we would always be laughing about it. We were making jokes about it. So we always found the light in whatever hard time there was.
Well, there's humor in everything.
Yeah, and Price was, you know, always just like a good guy that, like, really was trying to, like, take care of everybody. And, like, he would have I don't know if you remember this, you ask girls that you were friends with to write me letters.
Yes.
They would write me letters, be like, I know you're, like, it's hard at home that your parents are divorced, that, you know, we just wanted to reach out to you and, like, make sure you're okay. And I'm like, what, like, 18-year-old guy is
that's
doing
amazing.
That
the sweetest thing on the planet.
He was always, like, looking out for me.
Good for you. How did it affect your freshman year? I mean, obviously, I know it did, but in what way were you just, you had to take on a responsibility that you sort of weren't ready for?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had in my mind prepared for college,
right, like, you were ready to
freshman
go.
Partying,
right.
Girl.
Yeah,
I mean, I was excited.
Yeah,
and I went to I started off at a small school in North Carolina, in the mountains, and so everybody was close and everybody knew each other and stuff. But it was one of those situations. I felt so bad. I'd go home on the weekends to make sure that they were okay.
Mm.
So sometimes, if I was going out with a girl, I would take the girl. So we're back to the situation where
we're sissies right in the middle.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm like, I'm sad.
Still happens.
Yes. Who's gonna feed
you
me?
You go home to visit.
Oh my god.
You just sit right.
But
in
you,
between.
It sounds like you didn't have much resentment. Meaning, like, this is just what it is. This is just what I have to do. Was there a part of you like, motherfucker? Like, I just want to be. I'm missing out on my
absolutely.
On my experience.
Oh, I kind of joke with my wife. That, I mean, she went to University of Michigan, you know, tailgating, football, parties. She had the ultimate college experience.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, well, actually, I didn't make it. I got through my freshman year at this school, and I didn't make it past my freshman year because I felt, like, so responsible that I needed to go home. So I actually transferred. back to a community college where we live in the area just so I could be with my family. And then I ended up going to a school about 30 minutes from our house. So I could keep a close eye on what was going on because my mom was going through a lot. My dad was doing his thing. Our grandmother had started getting sick. Mm-hmm. So I felt like, you know what? This is kind of my responsibility. And so I'd kind of joke with people. I love my college, but it wasn't much of a college experience for me and stuff. When we went to, when my wife and I, we're going on 20 years this year of marriage.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah. And so she took me up to a Michigan football game. And I swear, it's just like I had chill bumps. Right. I went to that stadium.
You teared
100,000 people. And I did.
You teared up. Actually. I get it. I'm a huge sports fan.
Yeah.
I get it. Like,
yeah, he's a big
real.
Sports
yeah.
guy.
And I was just like, it was like all this emotion just kind of just came over me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, this is incredible. This is what I missed and stuff. But it was okay. I mean, I met my wife and, you know, now we have our son and everything's great. And the same thing with, you know, I talk, you know, about the parent situation. You know, my parents have a great relationship and all that now. And so.
And they had to get there. It took a minute.
Minute to get there.
And where were you at, Fortune, when you were 12 years old and all of a sudden brother's away at college?
Yeah.
And now, you know.
I think, well, that's probably why I'm a comedian. You know, the abandonment issues of just like everybody kind of went off, you know, and like did Jay. Got his license that year, so he was out of there. And both my parents, you know, they had to really kind of grow up themselves. I think the split, like it took my dad one way, and it took my mom another way, and everybody was trying to fix themselves or like look out for themselves. And I was like, you guys, I'm still here.
Tapping.
Yeah. Tapping. I got a top hat on. Hello. Who wants to see a show? But that's why I think my grandmother and I were so close. She lived just down the street and really stepped in while my parents were kind of finding themselves. And they did. You know, they did get to that point where they came back around and really, you know, made family the priority. Because I think it just was something that I don't think my mom thought she'd get divorced. I don't think, you know, and my dad, you know, just his emotional capacity was still growing, having had the...
You're my daughter.
Yeah. And so by the time I hit college, they both were, you know, had come back. I mean, they didn't go away, but you know what I mean? Like just being present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, settled. It's settled. Are they super close now? Or are they just...
They're friends.
Good.
Yeah. They're good. My dad was remarried, and so they don't... It's not like they talk every week or anything like that, but they know that at the end of the day, they're family. They've known each other since they were 17. He doesn't have any family. I mean, well, yes, brothers, but it's like he came up in a very difficult family situation, and all of her family, brothers, parents, they're all dead. So they kind of like know each other in a way that no one else knows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think they finally come to a place where they're like, oh, like you're my last lifeline to that story.
Mm. And your mom never remarried?
Well, let's talk about that.
She did. It was very brief.
Okay.
She had a companion for a while, and they just were never meant to be married. They got married, and I think once she moved in, he was like, "Whoa, no, thank you."
Yeah.
So it lasted 3 months, right?
3 months.
Oh, 3 months.
Man.
They just are very different people.
Yeah, that's being polite.
Yeah.
That was very polite.
But my mom made sure to have a big, huge second, this wedding. We begged her, like, please don't do this. Like, because we were kind of like new from day one. This was not a good pairing.
Yeah. And what did she see in this guy? I mean, why do you think?
Companionship.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Just someone to speak to.
He had a hearing aid. She likes some old guys. She likes the older gentlemen.
Right.
He would be like, hello, Ginger.
Yeah, that's a prerequisite. You have a hearing aid?
Hello, Ginger.
Yeah.
I love how your scarf matches your shoes.
Yeah. Like, yeah. He told my wife that he liked her pocketbook, and this is the first time that we met. And I was like, what did he just say? He likes my wife's pocketbook. And then he said, your shoes are divine. And I'm like, Who uses the word divine? you know, as far as, you know.
That's all we'll say about that.
I can make a guess.
Yeah, but
right.
They had a huge second wedding, and like, my mom got like a circus tent and put it inside the fellowship hall of our church. I'm like, oh, tents go inside. Okay. And she's like, I'm gonna serve hot dogs, and I'm gonna have nachos with jalapenos. I think she invited like 300 people to this wedding.
Yeah.
And they were divorced 3 months later. Oh,
wow. That is so amazing.
Yeah. Wow. So we have
Mom
a very
sounds like a character.
Oh, she is a character. Oh, yeah.
She is a character.
So when I talk about her a lot in stand up, and people are like, no way she's like that. And I put her on our podcast. I go, just listen to this.
Really?
And they're not. But now they love her.
Yeah.
They're just like, what's Ginger have to say about this?
I feel like your impression is pretty good.
It's pretty.
I mean, like, I can hear.
Yeah.
So within a couple weeks, we are going to be in the Rocky Mountains.
I don't reveal where I go, but yes.
The Rocky Mountains are a big mountain range, but we will be there. And you know what I'm going to do? The minute I pull up to the ranch in Colorado, I'm going to crack open a Coors Light, an ice-cold Coors Light. I'm going to wait for the mountains to turn blue, crack that Coors Light open, sit on some outdoor patio furniture, look at the mountains, and just get my drink on.
Sounds great. Here's my favorite thing about Coors Light as a beer drinker, as someone who likes beer, even though I stick to my spirits a lot because of this reason, and Coors Light is a great beer for this. 102 calories per beer. It's a 3-point beer on WW.
There's a psychological aspect to a Coors Light, okay? And I'm going to explain this for a second. When you go on a long mountain bike ride, which I'm heavily into mountain biking, okay, and you're sweating your ass off, and you pull up to your truck, and you're with your boys, and you load your bikes up, and now you're sitting in the parking lot, right? What kind of a beer do you want to crack open right then and there? You want a Coors Light. You don't want some sort of a heavy, you know, sort of stouty beer. It's part of the moment. Coors Light is speaking to my psychology when I'm out and about and I'm active and I want that freezing cold beer to just quench my dying thirst.
It's brewed. It's a 3-step process: cold lagered, cold filtered, cold packaged. So it's actually made to chill. Yeah. And so the mountains on the Coors Light, cold activated bottles, so they turn blue when you know that it's chilled exactly the way they're supposed to be chilled.
You can have Coors Light delivered, actually, by going to get.coorslight.com and finding local delivery options near you. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
You moved to Spain.
I did, yeah.
Some
like
Spanish
a life
stand-up.
Experience, yeah. I graduated college, and I don't know, I just like made this decision I was going to move to Spain. I had studied in Mexico a couple summers in college and was really fascinated with the language, and it just sort of made this, I had this desire to like see the world, but we had never had money. I'd never had the means to really explore the world, and I was just like, I'm going to live in Spain for a year. And I graduated with like $50 in my bank account and basically worked like 8 jobs for the next like 4 months. Bought a one-way ticket to Spain and lived there for almost a year.
Where did you go?
In Sevilla.
Oh, nice.
I loved it. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. Because, I mean, you're talking about someone who grew up in a town of 5,000 people. My college was 800 people. Now I'm living in Spain, and this was before Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
You know, you had to go to the like internet cafe, and you know, I was so disconnected from everyone. There was
scary?
No cell phones. Yeah, you were just like,
oh, sounds great.
You know, yeah. For me, I was this country bumpkin, just being like, "Hola, cómo estás?" Like, I was a real fish out of water. I took my guitar. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna become an amazing guitar player. I don't think I played once.
Like Spanish. Yeah.
And it was just me like struggling with all my luggage. Like, why did I bring this guitar? Oh my God. Everyone's trying to rob
me. Did you hit your stride though? I mean, was there a point where you're like, okay, I'm settled. Yeah, I get it now.
I got to a point where I could really communicate with people and understand, but I was never great.
Did you make friends? I mean,
yeah, I made friends. I went to a language school where I learned Spanish, and there was a lot of European people that went there, and I would make friends with them. And I traveled all over Western Europe by train, so they'd be like, you'd meet some, it's so different there, you'd meet somebody who was like, you saw them met for like 4 days, they'd be like, oh, when you come through Switzerland, can stay with me. You're like, okay, sure. I was staying with strangers all the time.
Fun.
People I never knew, but they would just open their houses. And so it was a way to like, I guess I just wanted to prove to myself that you didn't need money to see the world and to experience these things. Like, you can make that happen.
How do you feel about that now?
I'm so glad I did it, because I'm too big of a puss now to do something like that. I'd be like, oh, I have responsibilities and I gotta like work. And it was a time in your life where you could just give caution to the wind. Mm-hmm. And
did you visit?
I did not have the opportunity. I was working, unfortunately. I had an opportunity to go out to visit one time, and it's just schedule and just.
So you spent a year not seeing each other.
My mom and our brother Jay came for like 3 weeks over Christmas, because I never went back home. I didn't have the money to fly back and forth. And I said, I beg of you guys, this is a tiny, everything's tiny. We're not tiny. We're big people. Mm-hmm. Please just pack like small bag. The cars are small. The seats are small. Closets are small.
Everything's
tiny. I beg of you.
Right.
I picked them up in Madrid. 3 giant suitcases apiece. I'm like, I had not seen him in like 6 months. I'm like, I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. So we like barely fit in this taxi to go to the hotel. I knew someone in Madrid who let us keep like 3 of their bags in their house until we finished our 3-week journey.
Oh my God.
My brother brought a sleeping bag. I mean, you think Europeans don't have beds? You really need a sleeping bag?
Where were you planning on sleeping exactly? Yeah. Oh, how fun.
Did you guys, was there a time when you were not speaking, meaning not in any bad way, but just not connected, just circumstantially, and then found your way back to each other, where your relationship maybe grew?
Well, when Fortune moved out to LA, I mean, like she said, we live completely different lives. Yeah. I mean, I went, you know, I met my wife and we got married. And so there's, you know, now I'm a married man. And so, you know, she came out here, East Coast, West Coast, and we talk, we text. We just don't. It's 2 different lifestyles and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I always know what she's up to. I always know what she's doing. And obviously, we're so, so proud of her.
Yeah. As a family. When was the last time you saw each other before you came out here?
Christmas. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I try to go home like 3 times a year.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but you hadn't been out here in a while.
It's been a long time.
But, you know, it's hard, I think, once you have kids to really just like, you know, you can't really make those. We're like, oh, let's go to Paris this weekend. You know, it's just a different lifestyle.
Yeah.
Do you miss home or do you like L.A.?
I really love L.A. It's my jam. I'm very chill. I'm a chill person. And I like sunshine. And L.A. is a very chill vibe. I can wear jeans everywhere. And it's great. We go visit home, you know, North Carolina several times a year. So I get that, like, I get to see family and just sort of, you know, not go 1,000 miles a minute and just slow down for a second. But then I'm always like ready to get back.
It's interesting though, because we're talking about siblings, or you guys are siblings who see each other here and again, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, I mean, for the most part, the siblings that we've had on are in each other's lives
all the time.
Yeah. Right.
But there's something, but it's okay. You know what I mean? Like, when you guys are to get together again, I mean, it's...
Yeah, we just pick right back up. I think maybe sisters, the sisters that I know seem to talk a lot more. They're like a little bit more like day to day, or it's almost like with dudes, you can just kind of be like, oh, I'll talk to you in a month and it'll be like, oh, who cares, you know?
It's true. Although we talk like almost every day, but we do.
But I live. 5
yeah, you're
minutes
like
from
you're
you.
Part of each other's lives.
Yeah, yeah.
It is weird when I stop and think about it. I'm like, oh my God, I have lived in LA for 17 years. I probably see my family 10 days out of every year, you know, like when you really put them all together, it's kind of crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It is kind of crazy to see. I mean, so we're, you know, small town, southern town. Then you see LA, Hollywood, you see movies, TV show. And so it's just bizarre. Like when she did her Netflix special, it was in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And to see the cameras and the people, and for us, it's like, wow, like, man, she has arrived. I mean, she has arrived. So that was kind of a cool experience. And, you know, everybody back home was rooting for her. I mean, they're just, everybody follows her and is just a big fan in general. But even as a family member, you just love hearing about the success that she's having, which is great.
Well, and that's part of why I wanted to do it in Charlotte, is because I don't really get to share. They've seen my stand-up shows when I come to town, but I've never really gotten to share my life with them in that way. And, you know, I'm like, when I'm filming stuff here, I can be like, oh, I was filming this thing. And they're like, oh, that's great. But like, I wanted to show them, like, you know, this is a big part of my life. This, what I traveled to 45 cities just last year.
This is what you're working so hard for.
I want you to see. I want you to see how it's done and made. And so it was a big thing for me to do it at home, really to share with my family.
Was it emotional for everybody?
Yeah, it kind of was, because I remember when she was doing it for free at the local restaurant in Belmont, and it's like she was just happy to get an audience and to hear the jokes that she started with to where she is now. And the friends are like, oh my gosh, like she is like she's for real. And it's like, we saw her when she started in Belmont, and now she's on Netflix.
That's great.
And so it's just kind of like, wow, she's come full circle. And stuff. And it's like, man, that's my sister doing that. And so, and, you know, and I think back to you, people are like, oh, that looks, you know, it must be so nice just up there telling jokes and all that. You realize, man, you try getting up there with the microphone with, you know, thousands of people watching you and tell jokes and make people laugh. It's, you know, and so, I mean, we're very, you know, it's awesome to see that, you know, what she does, and we're very proud of
her. What was your first time on stage? Do you remember? Like your first set where you're like, holy shit, I'm on stage actually doing this in front of people.
I did a 6-week stand-up class. I had already been doing improv and sketch, but this was I did a 6-week stand-up class. And at the end of it, you do a set at the Comedy Store. I think I talked about, like, I hate strawberries. It was very, I wasn't
how
digging
was it?
Deep.
how did it go?
It was
over?
Good. It was fine in that it was like the people that came knew they were seeing a class.
Yeah.
So they were more forgiving.
Do you have any bombs where you're like, oh, shit. Like, this was gnarly.
My mom witnessed one of them in Virginia. Really? Oh. I had done Last Comic Standing. I got hired to do this charity event. And the guy that was in charge of it got fired like 3 weeks before, and whoever picked it up was like, wait, what is going on? And it was at this like biker bar in Virginia Beach, and they told me it would be like a nice sit down dinner, and it was like a Chinese buffet with like 6 options. All the people there were like, who is this person?
Right.
The stage was a crate, and the light was, you know, on those clamp lights at construction zone. I was like, oh my god, my opener was supposed to do 20 minutes. He lasted 2 minutes and went good night, and I was like, dude. So I just ate it for the next 40 minutes.
Oh really?
And at the end I go, come on mom, let's go.
So it's just not like, not, it was just quiet. Crickets,
yeah, just quiet, just people just kind of going, why are we here, you know? I go, I don't know why we're here. I got my check and ran out of there.
It takes such a tough skin to be a stand-up.
Well, stand-up's a great...
So much like admiration for you guys.
We're doing the Lord's work, guys.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Hallelujah.
It is a great... Stand-up is the one place where you can't really fake it, you know? If you're not... Like, there's a lot of people who can go on YouTube and be like, I got a YouTube series. Mm-hmm. But you can't... To get on stage and to, like, really... make people listen for an hour, it weeds people out pretty quick, you know. Yeah.
So let's do our speed round.
Okay,
so one word to describe each other.
Kind,
funny.
Hey. Oh. One word to describe the other at 12.
Feisty.
Funny still.
Oh
yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Something your parents don't know that your siblings did.
Oh, he found something.
Well, no, I was going to say your party.
Yeah. Well, we hired a stripper.
Yeah.
A male stripper.
Yes.
I don't know if my mom ever knew we hired a male stripper. Those were my friend's 18th birthday party. And I said I was just going to have some girls over. And it was like 50 girls yelling, take your pants off.
Yes. And I happened to be leaving the driveway when the stripper arrived. I'm like, who are you? Oh, I'm the performer.
He was in a suit.
He's like, I'm a cop.
Yeah.
He was in a suit.
Yeah.
We're like, what's happening? And the neighbor came over because he saw the cars. And they go, are you the stripper? And he's like, what? It was a very wild night.
Yes.
Sounds fun. I don't think you might have, you had a girl in your room. That was that was a big no-no back then. Yeah.
You're crazy.
He's like sweating now. Oh, don't tell anybody.
Who calls the other more?
We're both pretty bad about that.
Yeah.
I probably text you more.
Yeah, we're more texters than callers. Yeah.
We're not as chatty as our other brother and our mom. They talk like all the time.
Yeah, but we're big texters.
We're like, what's up?
Yeah.
Okay, cool, bye.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you spend Christmas together?
We do like every other holiday.
Right.
So that the family, the wives we spend with.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who's wittier?
Oh, me, for sure.
Me?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure.
Who could survive longer on an island? Deserted island.
Probably Price.
I'm an Eagle Scout.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. And I'm a terrible, terrible lesbian.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
People come up to me in Home Depot asking where things are. I'm like, I don't know.
What's one thing that your sibling is bad at?
Calling? No. I was going to say for me, it's calling.
Yeah. You're bad at calling.
I'm bad
her.
At calling, yes.
You're not a big hugger. You're bad at hugs.
Uh-oh, I'm going to hug you today.
I don't mind
leaving. Yeah, I'm hugging you.
They said my mom said he's like that since we were kids. He was like,
Really?
Yeah.
Really? What about with your wife? Are you guys affectionate?
Yes.
Yeah, he is.
Yes, we are.
But like we always do like bro side hugs. Right, like, yeah, what's up?
Are you an affectionate girl?
I am, yeah.
You all cuddles all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Who's the better cook?
Neither of us cook. Do you cook?
Not really.
Neither one of us got that.
Did your family cook?
No, our grandmother did, but our parents
Southern cooking, like
yeah,
that.
She was all that from scratch stuff, cakes from scratch, chicken and dumplings.
Mm. Oh yeah,
something. I love chicken fried and dumplings. Chicken. Mom, grandma made chicken and dumplings.
Yeah,
she made a great chicken. Yeah. You know what? I'm gonna make a chicken and dumpling.
Dumplings are not easy.
They're not. It's
I will be
dough.
Judging you guys, on your dumps.
Guys, my dumps.
You make good
light
dumps.
Get ready for my dumps.
Light fluffy dumps.
Wait till you taste my fluffy
dump. Taste my fluffy dump. My dumps rise to the top.
Okay, who's more athletic?
That's pretty even. Mm. We're both very athletic.
Yeah.
Who's more competitive?
Price
though?
And I were the one, or Jay was like really great at swimming, like unbelievable, but we could do like any sport right. Well. Except swimming.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Yeah.
Who's more competitive?
I'd probably say
me, yeah. I mean, because I grew up playing a lot of sports, and we had good teams, and so a lot of, you know, winning championship type deal. So I had that kind of embedded in me. Like, win.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'd play mixed doubles together in tournaments back in the day, which was a big mistake.
With each other.
Okay. He'd jump in front of me all the time.
Oh.
I was like, oh, you little mother. Oh. Well,
I got to say something too. I guess I don't have the killer instinct, because we were playing this family that said, we just came from Yugoslavia where they were bombing our village. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And they were sitting there, and Emily's like, don't listen to them. Don't listen to them. They're trying to get in your head. You know, we've got to smash them, Price. We've got to smash them. And they're like, oh, yes. And I'm like, oh, I feel so bad for them.
Like,
and
tennis is war.
Yeah. It was one of those things that's like, come on.
But
come
he was
on.
Like jumping in front of me, because I was a lot younger. So he didn't have the confidence that I was
going to carry
my part of the match.
Are you guys rule followers in general?
I'm very much a rule follower.
Yeah, I am too. I'm pretty guilty of that.
Who keeps the best secret?
Not him. He's
oh,
a
really?
Big old gossip.
You're bad, huh?
This guy's the town crier. He tells everybody. You tell him something, everybody's gonna know
about
it.
Okay, wait. So what is that, you think?
No, I just, you know, if it's with my family and we're having a discussion about something, it's kind of like, well, I need to have all the facts out there so everybody knows.
So he tells everybody what you just texted.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm all like, dude, he's thrown me under the bus so many times.
It's just like, a family. It's family. Yeah, it's
I'm like,
family.
Why'd you tell them that I said that?
But what if someone says, don't say anything?
Will you then?
I try my best not to say anything.
I try my best. He's a little chatty Cathy about that.
Do you stir the pot? Do you like to stir the pot?
Yes. If we're having an issue like with siblings sometimes, like there's a disagreement mm-hmm. about something, then maybe I'll try to, you know, get people together.
He has sent texts that I've sent to our other about our other brother to our other brother.
Oh, and like screenshot.
And then I'll be texting him and get a text from my other brother. What did you say? I'm like, price. Yeah. And he'll be like, I didn't mean to. I copied it and I didn't know all of it was sending. And
have you guys ever had like a siblings like a blowout crazy fight? Like where it's like, oh shit,
yeah,
wow.
Back in the day, mm-hmm. we've had, mm-hmm, those were common.
As adults?
They're few and far between, but they happen.
They happen.
Yeah. And we get it all out, and then the hope is you move on.
Right.
You know?
It never gets personal to where
we're
you
pretty
can't
good
come about, back from it.
Yeah, and we're pretty good about forgiving. And
we always love to know what your first celebrity crush was.
Mine probably was Sandra Bullock in the movie While You Were Sleeping. I was like, oh, I want to be in a coma and have Sandra Bullock coming to check on me.
That's amazing.
That's a good one.
Now, I'm going to be embarrassed because she's in here, but I watched a lot of Kate Hudson movies.
Oh, yay. They're first.
Yes. Yes. So when I was told about this, I'm like, really? I was like, you know, I was like, I'm a big fan of Kate Hudson.
That's
and so,
awesome.
Yes.
That's so fun. So exciting day.
That's so great. And I'm being honest.
Hi.
So.
This is I am honored.
This has got me sister cool points, so thank you.
Oh, I bet, right?
Ollie, do you want to do our last question that we left?
Yeah, we asked this to everybody. If you could take one thing from your sibling to adopt as your own, to take from them that you wish that you could have yourself, what would it be? And then if you could extract something from your sibling to take away something that might be a stressor in mm-hmm. their life or something that might be, you know, hindering them in any sort of way, what would it be?
I would say with Price, he has no ego. He's just like, there's nothing about, like, he doesn't hold on to grudges. He doesn't think that he's better than anybody. He just has this, like, he's just kind and a good guy. And he's never, like, trying to be the center of attention. And he's just kind of content with life. And I like that he's not that person that thinks it's never enough, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. And I like that about him. We've never had a real conversation like this. Yeah, we don't really dig too deep with each other.
But that's a good one, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what would I alleviate for you? I would want to instill even like more confidence in you, because I think that you're really talented and good at what you do, and you don't get much credit for it because you're not seeking that. So I would, in a weird way, I'm talking about how you have no ego, and I'm like, I want to instill mm-hmm. a little bit sure. in you so that you kind of claim how great you are at these things.
That's nice.
That is pretty nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
They're like joining hands. Yeah. Going on. Wow.
Well, just wait. Now you got now you have some pressure.
I tell you what. Well, you know, one thing that I admire with Fortune is her work ethic and her focus. And that is something, man, that I think is amazing that a lot of people don't have. And, you know, you see... you know, her story is she moved to LA with $25 in her bank account. And I mean, how many people do you know that would have that kind of courage to do something like that? And mm-hmm. I've always admired that.
Do you have that kind of work ethic?
Oh, no.
No.
I wouldn't take the chance. Like, well, I don't have the balls that she has, right. Put it that way. And I don't mind saying that. Right. And so
I'm the same way. I don't have her balls.
Yeah.
Kate's Our balls are massive. Big over here.
Yeah.
Big balls.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. And I've always admired, you know, her work ethic and what she's doing. I mean, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's great to see, you know.
And what would you alleviate from her?
You know, I do realize, as, you know, someone who is gay and lesbian, it is a hurtful when you see other people that, you know, don't want to give them equal opportunity and don't want to, you know, look at them as, you know, human beings, like, you know, well, you're gay, you're the devil, or you're a sinner and all that. That's something that, you know, you don't want them to have that pain to think, well, why am I not, you know, I'm a human being as well. And, you know, and I'm sure that hurts, you know, sometimes, especially for a gay and lesbian person in general. But, you know, I've seen her experience that as well. So, you know, take that hurt away in a sense. And that's so, beautiful. Yeah.
Wow, that's so awesome.
Aww.
That's so nice.
This is the only time he and I will ever share
that's family. That's right. We'll have to do another round of something.
This is your guys' homework for your next Thanksgiving. Yeah. Is right. That you have to go around the table and you have to do this with your family.
It's gnarly.
Yeah. And our family really doesn't open up like that.
Scary as shit. It's scary as shit, but sometimes, you know, weird things come out of it.
Yeah.
Everyone's crying all of a sudden.
And then there's always one person that does something where you're like, that was a little weird.
That was nice. Next.
All right. Well
thank you guys.
Thank you guys.
This was awesome. So wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you guys.
Sibling Revelry is executive produced by Kate Hudson, Oliver Hudson, and Sim Sarna.
Supervising producer is Allison Bresnik.
Editor is Josh Windisch.
Music by Mark Hudson, aka Uncle Mark.